Okay. Welcome, everybody, to our Lunch and Learn. Today we have on our call Gail Piazza and Laura Piazza, co-authors of a book called Recipes for Repair, a Lyme Disease Cookbook. And this is a book that has been in my waiting room now for maybe a couple of years. It came out in 2010, and people really like it. So I decided that it would be a very good thing to have the Piazzas on the phone call and kind of talk about the diet and the recipes. And apparently we're having a technical problem. Okay. All right. Let's check the sound. Sound quality is good. Okay. All right. We had a false start. Welcome, everybody, to our Lunch and Learn. Today we have on the call Gail Piazza and Laura Piazza, mother and daughter team, who wrote the book Recipes for Repair, a Lyme Disease Cookbook. And we've had this book in our waiting room for a couple of years, and people really like it. So we thought that we'd have them on the call to discuss, you know, how the book came about and what these recipes are about, et cetera. So welcome, Gail, Laura.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Can you, before we start, just give about a minute on your different backgrounds and how the book came about?
Sure. I am a chronic Lyme patient, and I'm also a graphic designer and a photographer. And I was misdiagnosed with Lyme for many years, and when I finally discovered that my symptoms were from chronic Lyme disease, I decided to read as many books as I could on the subject, and one of them was called The Lyme Disease Solution, written by Dr. Kenneth Singleton. And he is a Lyme literate doctor, and he's recovered from Lyme disease, and he found that nutrition played a really big role in his recovery. And so the diet in his book was of particular interest to me, and I wanted some help in implementing it into my life, and that's when I asked my mom for help, and she can explain what her role was in that.
Well, okay, so before you go on, I've been told by our technical person that you need to speak a little louder.
Okay.
Apparently your voice, maybe because you're on the line, on two lines, you're coming across a little lower. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I'm Gail Piazza, the mother of this team, in this team, and as my living for the past 35 years, I've been developing, testing and developing recipes and doing food styling. So Laura knows that, of course, that's what I do, and she wanted to go on the diet, but the diet was basically a list of ingredients that were allowed in each of the four phases. And she was like, there were a few recipes that the doctor's wife, who's a nutritionist, had developed, but really not enough. So she didn't know what she could do and asked me for some help. So I said, send me the list. She did, and I started developing recipes for the first phase, which is only a week. And she liked them, and then we moved on to phase two, and she liked those. And at that point, she said, wow, these are good. And, you know, with our expertise, you know, being that I'm a food stylist and I could do the setup of the food, and she's a graphic designer and a photographer, she could take the pictures and I could develop the recipes, maybe the doctor would be interested in doing a book with us. So we got in touch with him, and he said he and his wife had just been talking about that because he's had this diet for quite a while and gives it to his patients, but they're saying, you know, they're feeling better, but they would like some help and some recipes. So they had just been talking about it, and so he was interested, and so we started on it, and it took us about a year, but, you know, we did a lot of trial and error, and the results are the book.
So the pictures are great. You know, I want to eat the book.
Good. That's the point.
They're really, really good. So you mentioned, Gail, I think four phases, and
yes.
Tell if you can tell the people listening about these different phases.
Right. Okay. The diet is a diet of really exclusion and then inclusion. The premise is that the food that you eat, you know, typically can help you with the symptoms if you're eating good food with the symptoms that you have. It helps your body detox. And so the diet in phase one is trying to get rid of that inflammation, to knock it back, and to also detoxify. So phase one lasts 1 week. It's pretty restrictive. It's semi-vegetarian, but it does have a couple of, it has some, three or four fish and vegetables, some eggs, nuts, and fruit.
Do people feel worse in this phase?
No, actually, people start to feel. We hear from people they start to feel immediately better, because you have to realize that a lot of people that are going on this diet have been eating the typical American diet, which is as they call it, pretty sad. You know, it's they eat processed foods, they eat trans fats, they eat fast food, and a lot of packaged things. And in this diet, you're eliminating all of that. So you're immediately starting.
Let me ask you a question. I'm going to interrupt here, but
okay.
Is it time intensive?
Lunch and learn.
Well, in a way, first thing we suggest is that you read the forward, you read the book, you get an idea, you get a sense of it. No, it's not really time intensive. Most of the recipes can be done in a half an hour or so, or even less. There are a lot of salads. There are a lot of things that are really not that time intensive, and there's also Laura designed it so that we have divided. There are two sections that have sauces and pantry items, and we tell you that the best thing to do when you decide you're going to start this is to, if you're in phase one and you look through and you say, "Oh, I want to make these five recipes. So what do I need here?" So you see that you need X, and so you look and you see that you can make that, and you can make it ahead. So when it's time to cook, you have everything pretty much done ahead, like if it was a sauce or something that you're going to be adding. So, it just takes a little of reading ahead and planning ahead, but all cooking takes reading and planning. Without that, people say, well, how do you always get everything done, at one time? It's just a matter of planning. So, we felt also that a lot of the people that were going to be on this diet or reading book probably haven't really cooked that much. So we made provisions for that by explaining. There's a whole chapter on how to do things, what does zesting mean, these kind of things. So that if you read ahead and we gave you something, a whole section on typical equipment that you might need. So basically it's a basic cookbook. It's a basically good nutritional cookbook, but it's just designed in my life, I've never done recipes in my 35 years that I've been doing them for a specific group of people that were ill. And so it was a bit of a challenge, because in developing recipes, the first thing you think about is, first of all, they have to taste good. Second of all, they have to look good. And third of all, they have to be easy to make. And just because you're sick doesn't mean you want to eat yucky food. So
spend all this time cooking either.
No, and you don't. You really don't spend that much time cooking. As Laura designed it, people will know right up front what kind of time they need, because the recipe will tell you what the prep time is and what the cooking time is.
Okay. How about phase two? What is phase two?
Phase two, you start adding some more good things into, more different vegetables, some beans, some lean protein like lamb, venison, and white meat chicken. So this really opens up a whole new ball game for you, because now you're bringing some things back that, that you want to have and that you haven't had in the past week. But they're all things, they're lean, they're all good protein, they're all things that are good for you. And so we tried to do breakfast, lunch, dinner, and also dessert items in each phase, so that you really wouldn't, even in phase one, we have a dessert, because I don't know anybody who doesn't say, "Oh, I want something sweet," or "I can't do this." We don't want people to feel defeated, so we want everything. We want you to have a choice of everything, and also a lot of the recipes. In a lot of the recipes, we have cook's notes, and in the cook's notes, we tell you, let's say we were making the blueberry muffin, the blueberry lemon muffin, and you were tired of making that. So we give you a suggestion on how to change that up a little bit by making it like an orange cranberry muffin. And although that's only two ingredients, they taste entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
So we give you clues. Let's say in phase one you can't have ketchup, but in phase three you can. So if in phase three you can make the phase one recipe again and add the ketchup, and that adds a little depth of flavor to the recipe. So
and how long
tried
is phase
to,
two?
Even though there are 151 recipes, we've tried to give you like double the amount.
Mm-hmm. How long is phase two?
Phase two is 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And then what's phase three about?
Phase three is called the late reentry phase.
Mm-hmm.
And here you're bringing back foods that sometime would cause some people inflammation. This is where the nightshade family comes back in. And that, for people that might not be familiar, are potatoes, peppers, eggplant. And so those things sometimes give people an immediate reaction, especially people that have arthritis and that kind of aches and pain type thing. So there again, we recommend that you may add one of these items and you test it out, and you wait not just a day, because sometimes it takes a while for you to feel a response. And if you say, or sometimes it's immediate, you know, sometimes something really bothers you, and then you say, well, I guess I shouldn't be eating that. So basically you're always just bringing back things that we give you a list at the beginning of each phase where you will, these are the new items that are allowed. And since the doctor developed the recipes, he also broadened the number of food items that are allowed. Basically, what you're not having is you're not having trans fats. You're not having white flour, white sugar, things that are known to cause inflammation. And what you are having, what you are doing is you're preparing everything fresh, using, organic, if possible, vegetables and lean protein.
Now, let me talk for a bit about inflammation. Sometimes people ask me, well, what exactly do you mean about inflammation? And I think it's important that people understand that what it is. So if you get a cut, you notice that it kind of gets red and it's painful and might be warm. And so that's local inflammation. When we talk about inflammation in the body, we're talking about something like that, where there's increased blood flow to parts of your body, and the immune cells are releasing these things called cytokines, which are kind of like hormones of the immune system. And the cytokines float around your body and even go into your brain and tell your brain that, there's some kind of a immune system reaction. And they actually change the chemistry in the brain so that you don't make as much serotonin, which helps regulate mood, and you make more glutamate, which is excitotoxic, meaning it causes excitation and anxiety and can actually even be destructive to neurons in the brain. And you have changes in dopamine also. So inflammation in the body, in this case from Lyme, or it could be from other inflammatory illnesses or autoimmune illnesses, or because your adrenals are kind of pooped out, the inflammation that this book is targeting applies not only to Lyme disease but all conditions, and it can have a big effect on your mental health and your physical health. So it's important that we understand what we're dealing with. Inflammation is a central factor in all chronic illnesses. So if I had to really deal with one thing for anybody, it would be inflammation. But inflammation, much of it comes from bacteria, much of it comes from the air we breathe, but most of it comes from the gut and the foods we eat. And so that's why this book is so essential to people with chronic illnesses, including Lyme disease. So let's go on to stage four. What's that about?
Stage four is now it's 6 months or forever, really. It's at this point you're really not even on a diet anymore. You've now brought back all of the foods that are allowable, all of the lean protein, all of the fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds, and coffee and tea and things that you would normally have. You're just now eliminating, you're just taking away all of the things that would have caused inflammation, such as processed foods and the white sugar and the white flour. So those really never come back into your diet. And at this point, as I said, you're really not on a diet. You have a new way of eating. You have a healthy way of eating. So it's really your a recipe for success for the rest of your life and the way you should be eating.
Now, one of the problems, I think, is that when people are reintroducing foods, they might not wait long enough. So you eat, you eat a tomato today, and you can feel not so good in 3 days or two
right.
days, or it could be 2 hours. But
right.
So I don't know if you have much experience with other people, but say, Laura, in your experience, as you reintroduced foods, how slow did you have to go?
Well, I had on my side that I also had food sensitivity testing before I had implemented the diet, so I kind of knew what was good and what was not so good. And over the last couple of years, I have started introducing foods back in. And I'm glad you explained inflammation, because for me, when I first got diagnosed, I really thought inflammation meant that I would feel it, like it would be a pain in my stomach or something digestive. I didn't realize it could be as widespread as what you explained. So once I understood that, because inflammation is really explained throughout the book, and like you said, the introduction of foods, he does point out that you should introduce one food group and then wait a few days and really pay attention to your symptoms. So for me, it was minor, more subtle. It wasn't like a stomach pain. It was something that's more subtle, like a headache, or my blood sugar felt off. And so I would be able to identify, well, I ate this, and maybe I should stop, and then maybe try a couple weeks later. And if the same thing happens, then I know for sure that food is a contributor
yeah.
to the inflammation.
So you kind of have to do, sometimes you have to do a kind of test, retest, on, off.
Exactly.
You mentioned food allergy testing, and I want to mention to the people listening that I'm not going to say which company that I use because it's not appropriate, but I have sent in split samples to a few different food allergy testing companies, and two that were highly recommended. And I take blood from my secretaries. I take two samples and send them to the different labs and see how they come out. And they actually come out different. And then I talk to the labs, and they usually can't explain it. There is a particular lab. If anyone wants to email me through the website, wholepsychiatry.com, like in Whole Foods, WHOLE, I will be glad to tell you which company. But anyway, the point is that you have to be careful with laboratories that are really not doing a good job. But if you're doing it with a lab that has does a good job, the food allergy testing can really be very helpful, as Laura is saying. And sometimes the easiest way, although it can be more expensive, of doing this is to test the blood, see what you're sensitive to, which will catch most of the things, and then retest. It won't catch gluten sensitivity unless you do other testing. But test and then retest several weeks later. I usually wait at least 4 months, sometimes a year, and then you'll know what you can reintroduce. But you can do it with this kind of approach as well, and it works well. You just have to be very observant and careful, and maybe write down what your symptoms are and track, and so it takes a little more work. The other thing that I want to mention is that the way the immune system works is that if you are sensitive to a food today, it doesn't necessarily mean that you will always be sensitive. You may be sensitive. Well, I was sensitive to bananas. And so I said, well, no more bananas, and stayed off them for 5 or 6 years and just forgot about it. And then one day thought, well, let me have a banana. And I ate it, and I was fine. And that's because the memory cells in the immune system that remember that I am sensitive to bananas, they all died. They take about 3 years to die off, and the memory is gone. Now, it's a little tougher with foods like, milk and dairy products and eggs, the things that we've kind of grown up on. Those things tend to be the rough ones. But and they're harder to avoid completely, but it's not necessarily forever. And I think, have you noticed that, Laura?
Well, yes, I have added some things back in that I had tested sensitive to, and I seem to be doing all right with them. So that is a good, hopeful message there.
Yeah. Another question I want to address that comes up with people is, well, I was eating these things before, and, you know, I was able to eat them, and now I can't. Maybe this diet is making me worse. Has anyone asked you that?
We have had some people ask about the first phase, whether or not they'll feel worse. My mom had mentioned that most people feel better. We did actually have a question from a reader this week that said her husband was feeling worse. And what I relate that to is the detoxification process that she's, you know, her husband was probably going through some intense detoxification and he was feeling worse. But since I've spoken to her now, now he is feeling a little bit better. So, you know, it depends on how well you were eating before. If you were eating a diet high in sugars and then you just stop it, you know, you're going to feel the effects of the withdrawal from the sugar.
The other way I look at it is, because I wondered this, and many of my patients have wondered the same thing, you know, why is it, you know, I've been able to eat wheat all my life, and now I don't eat it, and now when I do cheat, I really feel it. Maybe this diet made me worse. And I think, in a sense, it's, you know, the analogy would be, you know, maybe you've been living with someone who's abusive all your life and you didn't notice, and then you get away from this abusive relationship, and then maybe you get back into it briefly, and, boy, you really notice it. So you can be abusing your body and not knowing it for a long time. But when you stop and go back to it, you notice.
Right. Well, you learn to live with it. You think it's your normal. So these things that are symptoms, you don't realize they're symptoms. You just think that's how you are. And then once you eliminate them and you feel better, you realize, oh, wait, maybe the food I was eating was making me feel pretty lousy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. Now, we're going to be opening up the phone, the lines for calls, and I believe it's *6 if you want to ask a question of either Gail Piazza or Laura Piazza, authors of Recipes for Repair, a Lyme Disease Cookbook. It's a great, great book. My patients really love it, and it's for people who have inflammatory conditions, including Lyme disease. So, again, press *6 if you have questions. It looks like we have one question so far. Go ahead.
Is it me?
If you press *6, then it's you.
Okay, perfect. I just know if you hear me. Okay, I have two questions. The first one is that I have been really enjoying my spritzer drink, but I worry that maybe I did it wrong because it seems so super sweet that it seems like it would be too sugary. And so I made it according to the directions. So wondering sort of about that. And then the other piece, which may be related to that, is I just finished the first week, and I actually haven't experienced any change in symptoms. So I don't know what to do about adding in new food because I don't feel any different. So I don't know how to measure whether or not the additional food changes anything because I never changed in the first place.
Good questions.
Yeah. Mom, do you want to answer? Do you want me to answer?
Well, you can answer, and then if I can add to it if I see that there's something.
Okay. Well, I think if you haven't noticed any difference, then you might want to hold off on adding foods back in because it might just take a little bit longer for you. You really should move on to the phases in listening to your body. So if you're not seeing any dramatic changes, then you might just want to hold off a little bit longer. In terms of the spritzer, do you have Lyme disease? Are you on antibiotics?
Yeah, I've been on antibiotics for 7 months.
Okay. When I was on antibiotics and doing the diet, I followed the diet with the icons at the top, the low sugar, because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't having too many sugars, even if it's natural sugar, because that could cause a problem with overgrowth of yeast. So if you feel like something is too sweet, I would say listen to your body and maybe put more of the water in it and less of the fruit juice, because you don't want to overdo it with the natural sugars.
Okay. Right. Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
I'm sorry. Yeah. What about coping with the exhaustion? Because I was getting through my exhaustion before with soda and coffee, and now I'm finding myself halfway through the day and falling asleep driving.
So you may have been treating adrenal exhaustion with the caffeine. Laura, your thoughts?
Well, for me, I need to make sure that I eat a lot of protein throughout the day. So I eat a lot of nuts, I eat a lot of eggs, a lot of animal protein with each meal. That kind of helps me with the fatigue. So I don't know if that's something that you're doing. If not, that might be something you want to add in.
Okay.
Thank
sense. You.
Yeah, generally adequate protein is important, and balancing the fats, proteins, and the complex carbohydrates is a really good thing in terms of keeping energy and inflammation under control. Another question. Next, just press star 6. Go ahead. Yep. I think you're on the line. Okay, I guess that connection didn't work. Does someone else have a question? Just press star 6. It looks like we have some people who have questions.
Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, I was wondering regarding allergy testing for food sensitivities. I haven't really found that to be very accurate or effective as a guide. And I'm just wondering, you know, why that might be.
I think that there are a couple of reasons. One, as I said, the quality of the testing can be a problem. And I would say that there's only one company out of four that I've tested that seems to be reliable. In other words, every time you test, when you test them with two samples under two different names, they come out the same. They should come out the same. There's only one company that I've found that does that. So that's one issue.
Which
the other
company
issue
is that?
You can email me and I'll tell you. I mean, I don't really want to give an endorsement on the call. The other issue I think could be that there are things on the diet that things that you're sensitive to that are not being picked up by the testing, because the testing doesn't pick everything up. And so I would say that would be the main thing. And then the strength of the food allergies themselves can vary, and there may be other factors that are getting in the way as well. So you could, for example, be hypothyroid, and you know, you can do a great job in the diet, but you may still be exhausted. So it could be things like that. Maybe you
have
diagnosed Lyme disease. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have adrenal fatigue and Lyme and chronic infections and heavy metal toxicity, and there's layers and layers to.
Yeah. So sometimes what you do is necessary, but not sufficient, and it may be the case. We have another question. Go ahead.
Yes, I had a question and also a brief comment. I had looked up the book on Amazon, and I was amazed by the uniformly positive reviews for the cookbook. One of the things I noticed was that a number of the people who wrote in didn't even have Lyme disease, but they uniformly praised the book. If you know, the people who wrote in either had a gluten or a wheat sensitivity, or they just wanted to establish good eating habits. So I'm quite eager to get the book. The question I had is that one of the reviewers indicated that she couldn't do phase 4 because she has a wheat and gluten sensitivity, and I wanted to find out if that's correct.
Well, if you know that you have a sensitivity, then we say that you in the book, and it's pretty obvious that you shouldn't be eating those foods, even if they're allowed. they're not allowed for you. So just because they're there, you know, doesn't mean that you have to eat them. It's really your choice. And yes, there are 138 recipes that are gluten-free and about 125 that are dairy-free. And so we have also, since we've written the book, we have on our website, we do some newsletters, and we've
What's
added...
your website?
Oh,
what's your website?
Laura,
www.recipesforrepair.com.
Great.
Yeah,
okay.
So, you know, if you come to the website, you'll see that we made a tart using... In phase four, there's the quiche, which is on the cover, and that's made with whole wheat. Well, you can make that quiche and make it gluten-free by using the different crust that we have now developed. So as time went by, people asked us questions. We thought, well, maybe they'd like to have a recipe for gluten-free bread, so why don't we do that? So you'll find additional recipes, and you'll also, you know, find more information that we thought about or people have asked us as we've gone by. And if you ever have any question or any problem, we're always happy to answer, you know, any questions that you have. And if you would like us to help you out with the development of a recipe, I'm happy to do that also.
Great.
Okay. I mean, the thing I like about the program is that it's structured and it has the four phases. And so I wanted to make sure that there would be recipes to try in each phase of the program.
Oh yeah, there's a good deal of recipes in each phase, and it's cumulative. So as you go through phase one, you can then continue to eat them in phase two, and phase three, and phase four. And there's a lot of variations on the recipes, so you definitely won't run out of foods to eat. You can obviously augment it with recipes that you come up with, as long as they fit within the parameters of the diet. But it's structured in a way where there are recipes specific to each phase, and it gives you an easy time to get through the diet.
Right, and I will.
We have
Thank
one
you.
More question, but I want to comment. Oh, we don't. We don't have one more question. So I just want to comment that in terms of the quality of the foods that are on this diet, and it's very important. There's a good range of foods, and that's providing you the basic nutrients you need. The reduction of inflammation in the gut is critical, because when the inflammation goes down in the gut, you can not only does inflammation in the body and the brain go down, but you can actually absorb things that you weren't absorbing before.
Right.
When you're getting your basic nutrients in, your immune system can function better, your brain functions better, everything functions better. So there are a few foundations to health. One of them is your gut. And the food that goes into your gut. Another one is the air we breathe. And another one is your mental attitude to life. And it's basically, what comes into us has a big effect on how our genes are expressed and how our bodies and minds function. And the food that comes in is critical. Every time you eat, the food you eat has a big effect on your immune system. So this book addresses a cornerstone of health, and I can't emphasize enough how much what you eat, as they used to say in the 60s, you are what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so this book is a really good thing for people. It's straightforward. It's very clearly organized. As I said, the illustrations, the pictures, photographs are so good, you're going to want to eat the book. I don't know what the caloric content is.
I'm not sure either. That's interesting, because we've had a lot of people, and we don't either, and I've always all my life worried about calories, but we've had so many people write to us, and as just an aside, that they've lost 15, 20 pounds more.
Oh, sure.
You know, we're never saying don't only eat this much of this. You know, we're just...
That's right.
They're eating what they want, the amounts that they want, and they're just losing some weight. So that's an added
benefit. Yeah,
they're
not getting all those empty calories. It's
right.
All high quality. When your body is fed, you're actually not really going to crave that much. You know, as long as you eat as much as you need to eat and want to eat, and get enough water and rest and some exercise, you know, the body tends to work pretty well. So with that, we're going to have to come to a close. I want to thank Gail Piazza, Piazza, and Laura Piazza, for talking with us about this book, Recipes for Repair, a Lyme Disease Cookbook. Excellent if you have Lyme disease, and also excellent if you have any inflammatory illnesses, basically anything that ends in a itis, like arthritis, you know, sinusitis, etc. So thanks again, Gail, Laura. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Doctor. We appreciate your time, too. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. For people who are on the call now, we will be having our next Lunch and Learn on August 8th. Keep your eye out for the newsletter that will come around and alert you to the topic. And thanks all for being on the call.
Say thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.